everybody. Coming from you here live from downtown Denver at Bri Forum. And this is a series of podcasts that we're doing for the mobile cast straight from Bri Forum. So it's nice because we have a lot of companies and great people to talk to and catch up with. And I am delighted to say that for the ninth episode of the second season, we have Eldad Alam, CEO of Hop2, joining us. Eldad, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about Hop2 and let's dive in.
Absolutely. Hi, Brian. Thanks so much for having me. So my name is Eldad Alam. I'm originally from Israel, sort of a long time, you know, 20 years now, sadly. Software engineer is sort of my background. I'm actually an author of a reverse engineering book in software, which is an area that I consider myself a little bit of a pioneer in. I did a lot of reverse engineering of software and related actually to this field and what we do at Hop2 a little bit. And as for the company, we used to be called Graphon. We're a company that's been around for a good 15 plus years. And we have a legacy in application publishing. We've been selling a product called Go Global for a long time. And back in the 2010, 2011 timeframe, we transitioned to mobile and we started thinking about this problem of how do you mobilize legacy and particularly Windows applications? And it's a very complex challenge. And so that's what we focus on today.
Okay. So for a change, you're actually a CEO of a public company. A lot of the companies in this field tend to be startups that we bring on here. There's got to be a story. Now, you kind of started there with USB Graphon, but how's this all work for you guys?
Yeah, that's right. So it is an interesting story. We're a company, again, used to be called Graphon, and Graphon back in the late 90s actually went public and raised quite a bit of money. And this is a time where you didn't really need much to go public and, you know, you didn't need revenue. You didn't need any of those things.
It's not like today where an IPO is very difficult.
I think today, you know, I think we're seeing a lot of overvalued startups. We're not seeing a lot of overvalued IPOs or public companies. It's a little bit, the public markets are a little bit more sane these days, even though you could argue a little bit of a bubble, but not in public markets the way I see it. And so back then they went public, raised a lot of money, I forget how much, tens of millions of dollars. But they weren't ready, right? I mean, we were getting into the space of application publishing and we had just released Go Global, the very first versions of Go Global. And Go Global is application publishing and we actually have our technology on the back end, which is similar to a type of multi-win, but it doesn't depend on any Microsoft technologies in the back end. It's sort of like an independent solution. We started selling that and the ramp up was slow and it ended up being a small public company. And it turns out that after a while, once you get to a certain size of shareholder base, you can't actually go private very easily. So we ended up staying public. And now, you know, we're 2015, we're still a small company and still in many ways a startup. And the vibe and the energy of the company is very much that of a startup, but we're a public company and we have to deal with that.
So how big are you?
We're like 40, a little over 40 people today.
Okay. And since you're a public company, I actually feel good about asking you these questions. What's your revenue these days and what's it split between? Because I'm sure you got a bunch of legacy stuff and new stuff, and I'm not sure how much of this you're allowed to share, but you're a public company. I'm going to ask.
It's a perfect. No, that's actually one of the key things about a public company is that you can see everything about us. You can see how much I make. You can see how much our revenue is.
I won't ask you that.
Don't ask me that, but you know, the listeners can go and check it out if they want. So it's kind of funny that way, right? It's all public. Our revenue has been averaging around $5.5 to $6 million a year. And the ramp up, essentially what's happening is that's been pretty much a steady stream from the Go Global business. And by the way, in the Go Global business, we have a pretty impressive and long list of, you know, enterprise customers, including GE and Ericsson and Siemens and a lot of other brand names like that, who use it for a variety of purposes. And on the Hop2 side, we just released our product like 6 or 7 months ago, and we're now in the early stages of ramping up a revenue stream from that. So we're actually not going to most likely report the separate revenue streams, but there's the beginnings of a ramp up on that side as well.
So let's start figuring out exactly what Hop2 is. I'd say you guys play in what I like to call the at refactoring game. Not exactly. You and I have had a brief conversation before this, but you sort of play in the app refactoring game. We're at Bri Forum. We have Redo here. We have Star Mobile who, you know, it seems all of you don't like to use the term app refactoring. I'm not sure why, but let's explain, you know, let's start at the 1,000 or 10,000 foot level and start diving down. So start up here and what do you do?
Absolutely. So, I can talk about what we do. let me do that, and then I can talk about Star Mobile and Redo and sort of how we differ a little bit. So where we started is, again, we're on the Go Global product, and we were thinking about mobile clients for the Go Global product. And back in like 2010, 2011, we started thinking about, you know, we actually tried it, right? And same as everybody else did, and Microsoft and Citrix and everybody else were releasing their mobile clients. We started looking at it and realizing this is not going to work, right? There's obviously a usability challenge. And at the time, by the way, especially the public capital markets didn't understand the problem that I was describing, but I said, this is not going to work. You can't just transport a Windows app into a mobile device and expect everything to be great, right? It's going to be a little bit of a challenge. And so we started thinking about approaches and ways to doing it. And we thought, we went through a process, and by the way, in the process, filed a whole bunch of patents. We have about 150 patents pending, of which like 25 are granted already. So we're pretty massive IP base. And it was all around, how do you solve this problem? How do you take an application that was designed back in the day, 20 years ago, and make it into something, turn it into something and make sense on mobile? And when you look at what, you know, our friends here, Redo and Star Mobile are doing, they're doing what I would call refactoring. They may not agree with that, but I think it's a pretty good descriptive word, where they completely transform the user interface of the application into a brand new thing that makes it look mobile, right? And that's, I think it's a great approach for a number, for some cases. And I can tell you that we have evaluated that extensively in-house. And what we ended up with, and keep in mind, we there's a couple of differences between us and all of those companies, and that is that we have been in business for a long time on Windows applications. We've been talking to a lot of customers. We sort of have a database, a collection, if you will, of a couple thousand Windows applications, right? And so that dialogue produced some different conclusions for us than it did for our friends at Star Mobile and Redo. And so what it was for us is, first of all, it's going to be hard to convince an IT department to go and spend time on mobilization. And we've talked to a lot of people who indicated that, where the IT department doesn't know the application well enough to completely redesign it. And then the end users don't know how to do that. So you have to get, it's sort of like hard, the challenge to find who's the right person to go do that. Second reason, is that it's a challenge to retrain the end users on a brand new app, and that if you could sort of leverage the existing user interface but mobilize it without completely transforming it, that would be advantageous. So that's sort of the process, the thought process that we went through. And where we ended up is with a tool that sort of preserves the look and feel of the application.
Exactly where it's going to go. So it's, you're more, because you have people coming from the desktop, the look and feel of the current application is important, but you make it easier to use on mobile.
Exactly. We do a lot. We do a number of, and by the way, we pride on the fact that many of these capabilities are absolutely automated. So we have a very complex piece of software on the Windows side that sort of analyzes your application and the screens in it, but without some sort of a designer, generally speaking, right? It's sort of an automated way to do it that analyzes what's on the app and what are the screens and what are the controls and what are the objects, and decides what it can do with it. Okay. There's a number of different levels to this, but for example, one key thing is editing, right? So if you're in a form, we provide you with a very easy way to sort of deal with the form. You tap in a text field and we gently zoom into it, pop the keyboard open, make sure it's visible. It's all those little things that when you're using Citrix Receiver or Microsoft RDP, really any remote access client, you're going to run into issues because they have no idea what's happening on the other end, right? To them, it's like, you just tap the text field. They don't know what it is. They just know it was a tap. Then you got to tap a button to open the keyboard. Then you got to kind of pan the screen to make sure that your text field is visible. That's the difference between success and failure with an end user, from my experience.
So you've automated a bunch of that stuff of, okay, they've tapped in a text field. I detect it's a text field. I'm going to pop that up on your iPad, on your iPhone, depending upon what you're on. I'd say a lot more of your apps are better for a tablet form.
Right.
Then a phone form, you know, because you guys can do Outlook, you can do basics and everything else. Although I will say, I don't think Outlook is ever a candidate for mobile, having done it and played with it. But that's just my saying. But
in terms of UI,
yeah, UI. Even if you touch enable it, you got 50 lines of screen. Converting that to 10 lines of screen and all. Now I'm betting you do something to help that, but
you're taking me to a different topic that I want to cover here. So.
We'll get to them all, I promise.
Okay, so this is important because the way we started out, I'm talking about mobilization of third-party apps in general, right? But that's actually a recent thing for us. Where we started out, and this is back in like 2011, 2012, we started thinking about this problem and we said, well, but there are some apps that are so popular that we should refactor them. And so, I mean, take any survey. What's the most popular app on VDI, remote desktop infrastructure? And it's by far Office, right? It's like 80% Office, right? And Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook. So going through that, we said, so how about if we just refactor those apps really, really well to a level where they feel completely native? And that's exactly what we did. So we have a refactored, and I'm using that term intentionally.
See, yeah, I'm saying you're using refactor there.
I'm using refactoring for those apps, right? We have a completely refactored version of a Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and Outlook, right? Where it doesn't look at all like the original app. And that's a little bit of a challenge, right? Because yes, it's a new thing. But it's a simple enough interface that I think most people get it. One of the cool things I can tell you about that is that the first product we released was actually a consumer version of those refactored Office applications. And so they have been used extensively. We have a several hundred thousand user base on them that's active. So that's sort of a proven thing for us. And what we do there is you get Word, Excel, PowerPoint. It's completely native UI. Like it doesn't feel Windows. You don't, like the consumer users that we have, they don't know. Like if you ask,
they don't know that they're actually,
they don't know that it's
Apple.
Windows. They think it's just a native mobile user, you know, document editor, but it's 100% compatible to Office, of course, because it is Office. And then secondly, it's got access to sort of the full feature set of Office because, you know, you run around a macro in your Excel spreadsheet, no problem because it's there, right? It's Excel.
To be fair, and you didn't get to see my presentation yesterday. I don't think mobile is designed to give all those features.
I agree.
And it's one of those, I think that where you see enterprise application developers run into issues is precisely for the fact that they don't know how to focus on what the user actually uses versus what, oh, this is the way it's done on desktop. There are 1,000, 2,000 features. Let me give them all.
I agree 1,000%. It doesn't make any sense. And I think if you look at the success of like, you know, iOS and Android as well, right? A lot of it is sort of deciding what do you actually need to put on there so the screen is not cluttered with 1,000 buttons, right?
So let's bring you back. So I moved you off to refactoring and Office and all. But, you know, let's get back to what you actually do. So you do things differently. And so let's go from the 10,000 foot to let's try and get to around, say, 100 or 50 feet.
Okay. So at 150 feet, I guess the level I would choose is to describe what our product is. Our product is an app. It's an app for iOS and Android that you download from the App Store. And it's effectively what it is today is an RDP client, right? It's a very unique RDP client where you connect to your existing RDP situation, whatever that is, and we're doing Citrix support, of course, and all that, those different things. And as you connect, rather than getting a graphical remote session of your Windows desktop, you get RView, right? And RView is essentially sort of like this alternative mobile touch-enabled desktop that shows you what you have on that machine, on that remote machine. And it starts with your applications, of course, so what applications you have installed. And we actually leverage remote app for that. So essentially, you're looking at remote app applications as they're available. And then you see documents as well, because remember, it's sort of an integrated document editor through Office. So if you have Office installed on that Windows system, it sort of becomes like a productivity environment, right? And you have, you're able to open documents and we're extremely flexible on storage locations.
So it's fair to say to a certain extent, although it doesn't look like a normal RDP client, you're actually getting a remote desktop that's sitting somewhere in a data center.
That's right.
So you do owe something to the VDI people and everything. You know, we are a Bri forum, so you know, I think they should get a plug that you know Brian's written the VDI delusion, the VDI reality. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got a couple books out there, and there's a lot of that here. You owe a debt to some of that.
Well, I want to make it clear: the consumer product that we had was a cloud-based solution. Yes. This is an on-prem.
This is for enterprise.
This is for enterprise.
You could run it in the cloud, but you don't.
Yeah, but the point is, it's a customer systems, not ours, right? So we're talking about an RDS server here that's customer owned, customer managed. I don't care where it is. You're connecting to it. So yeah, absolutely. It's a VDI. I mean, depending on the specific configuration. And it's launching that session. And the difference is in the presentation layer. So we present it differently, right? So you're looking at the documents. You're able to tap on a document. Now, the documents can be stored anywhere. We actually support cloud storage as well, so Google Drive and Dropbox and so on. And we also support SharePoint integration and all of that completely touch-enabled interface. You tap on a document. It opens it by launching Office. But again, you don't see Office. You're kind of getting our environment, our representation of Office for that. And then the other thing we have is, and this is a really unique thing, we went, because we were replacing the desktop completely, we have sort of our own, you know, task bar, if you will. We have a tab bar at the top of the screen that looks like sort of like a web browser if you look at the mobile Safari on your iPad there. So you know the tabs?
Yes.
We do the same thing for applications and documents. So you can have five Word documents open at the same time, an Excel spreadsheet, and five remote apps, and you can kind of jump back and forth very easily between one and another.
So let's just start here with... Before we get down, there are some limitations to this. You have to be connected. Mm-hmm. You can't run offline.
Correct.
I'm going to guess it's RDP, it's VDI. What's it look like? So for the client, so the good news for the client is they only need one application from you, and any changes you make are on the back end. But you're not; they're not mobile applications. They're truly legacy applications that you are making available. I think some of your secret sauce and kind of leading you into let's start getting to the real nitty gritty is the fact that you not only you touch enable, the magnifying glass and all these other things, and it definitely behaves more like a regular document, but you make it much easier for people to access the commands. So they don't appear in a drop down menu, for example.
Right.
So why don't we go there and you explain how that works?
Absolutely. So as you launch a remote app in Hoptu, the way it works is fundamentally, without doing anything, without knowing anything about that app, there's a number of things that we do to make the experience better. And so that's the first thing I want to talk about. Then I'll talk about the menus that we're talking about. So the first step is we identify, for example, edit boxes in that app. We identify the screen that you're at and a number of different things like that. And we improve the experience. For example, whenever we can, we will zoom in a little bit, and depending on the state of the app, to make buttons bigger so you can, they're easier to hit, right? If you tap on an edit field, we would actually zoom into it and pop the keyboard open and make sure it's visible completely automatically. No customization. I don't need to know what the app is for that. And then within that, as you sort of like drag your finger over that text field, it'll show a magnifier, the iOS magnifier. And if you double tap on a word, it'll show like selection selectors, right? Markers and the iOS menu for cut, copy, paste. So a lot of things like that to make, especially filling a form in an app, which is a lot of our customers end up having to do, we make that really feel quite native. And we've gotten a lot of positive feedback on that. It still kind of looks old, and it's got that old, slightly ugly look of a Windows app, to be perfectly honest. But it gives you that the user experience value to some degree of a native mobile app.
So, okay. So it's fair to say that part of what you do is your gap filler, which, by the way, will lead to another question in a minute, but your gap filler in that you have legacy applications and you don't have the time, the material, or the developers to turn those into modern mobile applications today.
Mm-hmm.
So you perform a service where you're really filling that gap and letting those be used, but more like mobile apps.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Exactly right. And the point is to go to a customer, which we've been doing for several months, and go to people who need a mobile solution today, and their vendor, whoever it is, it can be Epic and Cerner, and there's 1,000 Windows app developers like that who don't have a mobile solution. And so, or don't have a mobile solution that addresses the needs of the particular customer. And so we're able to say, hey, tomorrow morning I can get you up and running with your app, and it'll be significantly better than what it is on existing solutions. Now, the next step is to add a little bit of customization to this, and that's what you're referring to with the menu. So essentially, our assumption is that, as you said before, think about Epic, right? I don't know if you ever looked at Epic. Epic is like this giant.
I have a pharmaceutical background. I have seen Epic.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so you must have seen Epic. So gigantic thing. No one needs access to the whole thing, right? But you have a certain department or a certain area in a company that's going to want access to certain screens in the app, right? So what we do is we give them the ability to, and this is almost end user level, right? I mean, it's not only you don't need us for that, you don't even need, IT for that. It's a very simple operation where you can customize like these little macros that perform operations with this hierarchical menu. So you can say like activities, and under that, I can't think of an example, but sort of like a hierarchy of operations that ends up in an operation that gets the app to do something for you. And we present those menus very elegantly for you at the bottom of the screen. And they're very touch friendly, obviously, and very nice and easy to use.
So there are two things there. Number one, you can actually take pieces out of the menu that are up there that may be embedded and bring them down. Mm-hmm. But you also, for lack of a better term, enable me to do a Word or Excel macro where I can take a couple of actions and create a button that does that all at once.
Exactly.
So, and obviously that requires user admin interaction to design those. But
Right. But the assumption is that, you know, a specific end user has some needs to quickly access certain areas of the app. So we make it like a single button thing. You push it and it goes there, right? And then there, the question is, how user-friendly is it, right? So that's why we do the editing and sort of the other stuff that we do automatically. That's the idea. We sort of combine it.
So this leads to an interesting question, at least I think. Brian Madden and Gabe Knuth will disagree with me, but I think eventually you kind of run out of things to mobilize, because I would hope that in 5 to 10 years – we still don't have the same legacy apps. Now, Brian and Gable disagree with me and say Windows apps will be around forever. And to a certain extent, yes, they will. But I think a lot of them over the next 10 years are going to, you know, you look at what Microsoft's doing with Outlook, you know, with Office and all these other things and making them Windows 10 enabled. I think you're going to see some more of that, not everything. And there'll always be one or two. But the question becomes, either you start charging more for those, or where do you see Hop2 going?
Yeah. So look, I mean, to be clear, we have a roadmap that extends beyond this. I don't think we need to talk about it too much today, because
there's still
plenty of this around. And by the way, I mean, everybody we talk to, certainly here's one of the things I've learned. If it's a young organization, right, like sub 10 years, let's say, right? And if it's a small organization, sub a couple hundred users, then they're probably not going to have a need for this. But on the other side of it, anything larger and older than that, they always have. And I'm sure you've seen the same thing.
Everybody's running legacy apps. They're there. It makes sense.
Right.
So
it's got – I mean, just to sort of finish my point, it's got a limited lifespan to some degree. But my feeling, and based on – again, I've been in this
– that limit could be 30, 40 years.
I think it's in decades. I really believe. And that's sad, right? It's kind of sad, because you would hope that everybody would transition. But – you know, we have some really interesting data on what is the cost to take a nice complex business app and completely redevelop it, like make it a mobile app. And it's hundreds of thousands of dollars per app. And you look at a Fortune 500, they have thousands of them, right? So or many of them have thousands. I'm sure you've run into
some have hundreds, some have thousands, some right. have tens of thousands. Yesterday in my presentation, one of the things I did is we looked at two app calculators of just actually building an app from scratch. And, you know, there's one on the Kinvey site, they're an MBAS, and there's one on the Otera site, which is a mobile app solution provider. And, you know, one of them said the app would cost about $500,000. The other one came out with about $400,000 without using their products. And so it's not cheap. And certainly if they're home developed apps, part of the problem is you've hard coded something, the developer's no longer there, let's just keep it running. So, you know, I get it. But you know, one of the things, and you've said this publicly, so I don't feel bad about saying it, is that part of your secret sauce is that you actually do it through menu shortcuts. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
What happens when you have an app that doesn't have menu shortcuts?
That's a roadmap item. There's a roadmap item to support apps that don't have menu shortcuts. One thing to understand is that we spent a lot of time on Office and Outlook and all that. And the third-party app mobilization, what we call MAX, Mobile Application Experience, which is everything you were talking about here, is a relatively new thing for us that we announced just in March. So there is a very deep roadmap here that you're not seeing yet. So I apologize.
And to be fair, you're moving quickly. You announced it in March. Your product's only been out for 7 months. So, you know, you're not slowing down. But again, if we compare you to – yeah, let's take Retto, for example. Here at Briform, they have the vendor set up. Retto's about 15 feet from you. Mm-hmm. They are different from you. But in some ways, they'd say they're solving a similar problem.
It's true. They're solving a similar problem. I see, and I've actually heard this from, you know, from the industry and my experience with the industry. I've heard three concerns with Retto, right? The first one.
And let's not bash them here. Let's be fair here.
No, of course. I never do that. By the way, I want to make something very clear. I firmly believe that as I see this market today, and I see Capriza and Star Mobile and Reto and ourselves, and there's probably there's Powwow, right? I mean, that's another company. I'm guessing that all of those could survive. So I'm not like
there's room for a lot of us.
This is a large space. This is a large problem. I'm not, you know, not thinking we're trying to conquer the whole thing.
And to be fair, because some things that are on your roadmap, they already do, but there are things you do that they don't do. Yeah. So
I mean, I give an example, right? I mean, we have a document management sort of productivity opportunity that because of our Office integration that's been coming along really, really nicely that has nothing to do with them, for example, right? Because they don't do a document editing. Yeah. They don't do any of that stuff. So it's not, the overlap is not complete. But what I'll say about the approach, I don't want to talk about specific vendors. I'll say about the approach, one challenge is from our experience, and we have some really hardcore Windows engineers, is that the application coverage you're going to end up with is going to be somewhat limited. Meaning that out of the 100% of Windows applications out there, you're going to relatively frequently run into applications that you can't fully refactor, that there's certain areas of them that just don't work or the entire app doesn't work.
So saying that, what percentage do you guys cover? Because obviously not everything has keyword shortcuts for everything. So, and I understand you have it on your roadmap, but right. Today, what do you cover?
So we cover, I think, probably well over 95% today. It's really, really good coverage. And our goal is to cover essentially 100%. So that's the thing. So I would argue it's not as deep, but the it's much broader in terms of the coverage that we're going to have, right? That's one thing. And then the other things that I mentioned earlier about the familiarity of the user interface, right? And things like that. And also, thirdly, the challenge of who ends up sort of implementing the transformation, right? Who in the organization will take Epic or again, whatever the app is and transform it? I think that's a challenge. And I can tell you that, I'll give you a little anecdote, the little keyboard shortcuts, that's an answer we've heard from some Fortune 500 organizations that we were talking to, which is great. Now, who's going to do the keyboard shortcuts? And I'm like, really? I mean, that seems like a pretty small and minor thing. They say, well, yeah, you know, but it's hard to find the right person who will know the app and the way it's used well enough and is technical enough to go do that.
It's interesting that although many times the business will decide on a product or a solution, but it's unless they bring the users in. And, you know, you've heard me talk about the fund principle. Unless they bring the users in and they focus on the user needs, they don't actually half the time know how the user uses the app.
Absolutely.
And that becomes a sticking point.
You know,
I can see that for you.
Agreed completely. And, I did a little survey here. We've seen, you know, a whole bunch of people here at Bryform, and I've been asking them that question. You know, usually they're IT guys, right? And do you know the application? Well, I know the application in general. Can you use it? Oh, I have no idea how to use it. Do you know what features, what screens? They have no knowledge, right? They know how to deploy the app. They know the servers. They know the network infrastructure. They know, you know what I mean? They know the low level side of it. They don't know what the app actually looks like. And so it's a little bit of a challenge.
Okay. So it becomes interesting, but I would, I can see taking the other side and having the argument with you that, yes, you're working with something that breeds familiarity, but wouldn't it be much better to turn it into something, what some of your competitors do, refactor it and make it more mobile-like, because that's what people deal with on the iPad, on the iPhone, on the Android tablet and all that.
It's a compromise, right? And one thing to understand is that we have stared at that question for a long time. And the conclusion was that, and part of it relates to, and I go back to this again, relates to the experience that we have with Windows. We have seen so many apps. And it relates to the fact that as we started designing the solutions, we started applying them to the thousand, I'm not joking, but we have a lab in one of our development offices with like 1,000 Windows apps on a bunch of VMs. We started just throwing out these solutions at those apps, and they failed so frequently that we realized, it's really going to be hard to attain any decent coverage. So again, I don't want to badmouth anyone else's solutions, but I think it really remains to be seen.
You all cover different things, and you're truly different at the moment.
Right.
So we know that you're different. You're different coverage areas and everything else. What's the traction you're seeing? You're obviously going out to customers, and my guess is you do a free demo. What's the traction you're seeing? How do you charge? How do you price this? Is it per user per month? What is it?
Yeah, so currently we price it on a perpetual basis, so it's $99 MSRP, and that includes first year's maintenance, so we went with that model. We are going to add a monthly subscription model shortly here because some customers have expressed interest in that, unsurprisingly. We are getting some early traction. It's been interesting to sort of watch it, right? And I think part of
the... hang on, $99 per user per year?
Per user, no, that's perpetual, so it's per okay. user including first year's maintenance.
Okay, and then you charge maintenance, obviously, exactly. which is... So my guess is the application is free.
Yep, that's right.
And you're really charging for the number of users that go through the server on the back end.
Exactly right. Because remember, we have it's basically a free app that you download on the client, and then it's a small agent, we call it an agent, piece of software on the Windows side that does the magic on the back end. So there are no additional components on the customer's network, no additional servers, of course, no network ports you need to open or anything like that because it's all essentially RDP end to end. What we do have is we have an agent component that you install on the Windows system, wherever that is. And it could be a Windows server or a Windows, you know, client system or whatever it is. And all it is just it runs inside the user session alongside their applications and does the magic of sort of, you know, reporting information about the running applications. That's the way this works.
Okay, so $99 sounds reasonable because it's a perpetual license. Mm-hmm. You know, you break that down. Normally, you'll see some people are charging $5 a month. Mm-hmm. You know, you're already, you know, you multiply that out by 12, you're $60 a year, 2 years, you're already there. Some are charging more. I'm going to guess that depending upon how big the organization is and the number of people, you cut your own deals. I'm not going to put you on the spot for that. Okay, so you start talking about traction because I wanted to get price. Let's talk about traction a little bit.
Absolutely. So it's been interesting. We are talking, first of all, there's dozens of opportunities that we're pursuing, and there's quite a few customers have already signed up and have started using it. It's been great to watch. And the requirements, we learn a lot about requirements and what they want, and depends on the industry. There's a couple of POCs that I think are about to get started with Fortune 500 level organizations that we're really excited about. There's also, and most of what I'm talking about here is what we call on the Mac side, right? Meaning they have a third party application that they want to see, you know, mobilized in the way we do it. There's another side to the opportunity, which has been interesting, which has been on the document management and document editing side. And that's been a big thing for us because we're discovering that there's a really strong need there where, especially some document management players, right, that have mobile clients, but in those mobile clients, they're not able to offer any editing. They're not able to offer anything else really other than just sort of viewing the documents through their system.
They render it, but they don't allow you to actually manipulate it.
Exactly. Now, if they do allow you to do that, they're going to have to open something like open a document in something like Office for iPad. And that creates a lot of security issues for some of these players, and they can't really tightly integrate with Office for iPad. So we're seeing a lot of interest on that side where we can sort of tie it all together and allow, basically provide full integration into their document management system from within our app. So now I'm browsing my documents. And this is especially relevant for sort of security sensitive organizations like law firms or financial institutions and things like that. And they will be able to browse the document management system from within our app, click a document, edit it in Word, Excel, or PowerPoint, click save, and it gets committed directly back to the document management system. And the editing takes place on the customer's network, and the document never actually reaches the device. Couple that with the Outlook integration that we actually haven't released yet, but it's been developing for a long time. And that offers really strong integration, so you can have email integrated with the document management system as well. So that's been a very unique part of our offering that we're getting a lot of traction on as well.
So it's fair to say that you're sort of, and you know, you're coming right after a series of podcasts that I've completed with a bunch of VMI vendors. You're sort of almost a combination of a VMI cross VDI vendor with some mobile. I know you don't love the term refactoring but for better use of a term, you're kind of a combination of all three, it seems like.
That's right. That's a very good point. And that's been, it's been an interesting process of determining what are the right words to describe our solution, as you can imagine. But when you think about
and to be fair, when I met you for the first time last week at another conference, I had no clue what you did. It took you a while. And, you know, this has been really helpful for me.
Right.
And I'm sure for the listeners.
Right. Great. Yeah, I agree. It's a challenge. And I think the easiest way to think about it is that it is a remote desktop client at the end of the day that mobilizes whatever you have on your Windows system. That's sort of the way I think about it. I think it's the simplest way to summarize all of these features sort of in one place.
Okay, yeah. And online, I'm guessing people can get to you at www.hop2.com.
That's correct. We have a 30-day free trial. I encourage people to try it out. I'm, you know, love to get feedback and see what people say.
I have to say, I love all you companies that are drug dealers. It's come try it. When it works really well, you get addicted, and now you go and you have to buy it for your people. So,
Brian,
and
if it works for the drug dealers, it'll work for us.
Any last words you want to give?
I think that's it. I think it's a really interesting time. I'm seeing a lot of interest in the space. I'm seeing, again, with the vendors that we have out here, I'm seeing a lot of interest in it. That's really good news. And that's another thing for us, right? I mean, any interest in the space is good for us. And so it's a very exciting time, and we have a lot more coming. So it's going to be an interesting thing to watch.
Excellent. Thank you for hanging out with us today, Eldad.
Thanks so much, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And for our listeners, we're going to have we may have a few more podcasts coming from Briform, but this has been episode 208, and look forward to seeing you next time.